And now we are joined on the line by Richard Budge. Hello, Richard.
Good afternoon. How are you, Craig?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Very good, thank you. Lovely day here in Pairoa.
It's a beautiful day here in Whangarei too. And what are you up to today, Richard?
Well, we've just been getting ready for the next push in the media campaign where we're trying to raise awareness about all things industrial hemp.
Mm-hmm.
And that will lead us to a call for a review of our regulations and hopefully getting us finally out of the control of the Misuse of Drugs Act 1975, which is long overdue. And they've got to realise that we're just another arable crop and we're not a drug crop. So that's the call to action in the next sort of 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully you'll see some social media campaigns, et cetera, that help to highlight that. And if anybody's interested in receiving that information, I'd suggest they go to the nzhia.com website and subscribe, and they will get the public newsletter so they can be aware of those calls to action and write to their local MP saying how great a local hemp industry would be for their region.
Absolutely. And the NZHIA, folks, in case you don't know, is the New Zealand Hemp Industry Association. We're talking to the chair of that association right now, Richard Budge. And I guess we'll start from the start. I mean, what is hemp and how, you know, it's grown in Aotearoa and what are its uses and I guess how many acres around about are there in Aotearoa?
Right, well, okay, quite a wide opening question there, Craig.
Plenty of scope for you.
No, I'm sure it'll lead on to some interesting conversations, but hemp is cannabis, and that's why we're under the Misuse of Drugs Act 1975. We have our own industrial hemp regulations, and a regulation has to sit under an act, so that's why we're under MODA, which is the Misuse of Drugs Act controlled by the Ministry of Health. So in our industrial hemp regulations 2006, it defines what industrial hemp is. So it says that hemp is cannabis sativa and industrial hemp is low THC hemp.
Right.
So you need a license under the regulations to grow a low THC industrial hemp crop. And only hemp products can be made from industrial hemp. So in a way, it's quite a nice little closed loop in the sense that you can get a license to grow hemp and produce hemp products. And as long as they're low THC industrial hemp, in our opinion, it shouldn't be a problem at all because we're not a drug crop. We're just another arable and horticultural crop.
Mm. Mm.
And so with regard to the end uses, when we think of it from the New Zealand Hemp Industries Association's point of view, we have sort of four corners of the industry. The everything's underpinned by what happens on the farm. So the growers are a big part of the starting point, and you have people that would grow for, in an arable cropping sense, they would be growing for grain, the seed of industrial hemp,
yeah,
and for fibre from the stems. And then, so that's the food and fibre industries, and then the health and wellness industries would be more aligned to a horticultural crop where you're growing female-only plants, so you don't have the issue with pollen,
yep,
and you would be growing those for the markets in that health and wellness area, whereby you've moved a little bit, if you can imagine a spectrum starting at food and then going to functional food into sort of nutraceuticals and natural health products, those natural health products end of that spectrum. So you're not making a medical claim, so you're not medicinal cannabis, which has its own separate regulatory environment called the medicinal cannabis scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not making medical claims, you're making health and wellness products. And what that means is that you're growing a plant, a female plant, as I said, without the pollen, because you're interested in the 500-odd metabolites in the flowering, the leaf and the flowering tops of those plants.
Wow.
And that's just a chemical treasure trove of opportunity. You know, you've got terpenes, flavonoids, and, of course, cannabinoids. And the two big cannabinoids that most of your listeners would be aware of would be the THC, which has the psychotropic effect, and of which we have very little. By regulation, we're only allowed up to 0.35%. and sometimes up to 0.5%. So it's not a drug crop at all. You know, there's no noticeable amounts of THC in many of our tests, and feedback is that it's well below those levels anyway. It's a naturally occurring plant.
Right.
net reoccurring in the plant. And then, of course, you've got the other cannabinoid that your listeners would be aware of, which is CBD, which is also naturally occurring in the plant. And that, unfortunately for industrial hemp, is controlled as a prescription medicine under the Medicines Act. So we get hit over the head with the Misuse of Drugs Act, 1975, and the Medicines Act, 1981, both of which are in desperate need of a revamp, as is a lot of legislation and all sorts of things these days. But it's quite an issue for us. And what we're wanting to do, and it's been an objective of the NZHIA since we got started in 1997, is to remove ourselves from the Misuse of Drugs Act.
Right.
Because, again, we're just another arable crop. So from those four areas, we talked about the growers, the food, the fibre, and the health and wellness industries. You can imagine the types of products that are involved in that. And this is very wide-ranging, because if we consider fibre, we could be thinking in terms of, many people think of the traditional uses of rope, cordage, clothing. But these days there's also a very, really exciting area in the composites, the replacements for plastics, the biopolymers coming out of the lignins and other components of the hemp stem. And then you've got all sorts of things that can be used from the hemp herd, which is the inner pithy part of the plant. On the outside of the plant, there's these long bass fibers, which are useful in, for example, geotextiles and apparel textiles. But that inner woody pith we call the herd or the shiv, and that's got great uses not only in traditional markets such as horse bedding, but also in many, many uses in the construction industry. For example, hempcrete, which is a mixture of lime, water and herd, which makes a product that you can build homes with. And these are very, very healthy homes, no more mold. Acoustically great, thermally great, less energy required to heat them in the winter or cool them in the summer. So it's an amazing product from the construction side. And then, of course, you've got your paper and pulp industries that could be interested in the long and the short fibres. And you've also got, as a biofuel and that biorefinery type circular economy aspect. And then when we talk about the grain or the seed, then you're mainly thinking about foods. And these are wonderful balance of omega acids, particularly 3 and 6 in a perfect ratio for human use. And the byproducts have a market in all sorts of ways, all the way from industrial lubricants and paints and stains and things like that, all the way through to, if we had access to it, the secondary market for animal foods. And that's a massive opportunity too. And this speaks to the call of the NZHIA members and lots of people involved in the hemp industry, that they want what we refer to as full plant utilization. So we want to be able to access the revenue streams from all parts of the plant.
Yes.
Because then the economics sort of start stacking up. When you can only press for oil or dehull for hemp hearts, then what do you do with these byproducts? And Brad Lake from Brothers Green actually had a really interesting post where he's standing on the front of a truck and trailer unit with 20-odd tonnes of this byproduct all set to go to a landfill. And, the observation was that this could easily be an animal food or an agricultural product to help condition soils. And yet, we can't, because of a piece of legislation called the ACVM, which is the Agricultural Compounds and Veterinary Medicines. And that's part of MPI, and their position is that you can't use it as an animal food because of the perceived risk that CBD or THC metabolites will remain in milk or meat products that could be exported to sensitive export markets. Now, of course, we don't want the emerging green protein industry to upset the white protein or the red protein industries. And it could be a real problem for trade. If one of our trade partners said, oh, well, just because you've used hemp near your animals or fed your animals with it, we're not going to accept any more of your products. And that, obviously, from a trade negotiation point of view, would be devastating.
Indeed.
And, but that said, the reality is that we need to be in a rotation with other farming alternate land users. So we need to get some work done in that space while our overseas trade partners get their head around, particularly THC and CBD, for the reasons we've just discussed.
Right on. That's an excellent, excellent wrap-up. Well done, Richard.
we got through a few of these. Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. And so roughly how many kind of acres in Aotearoa are in hemp production at the moment?
Well, it peaked in 2020 when, if we look back in history, in 2018, the food law changed to allow us to use hemp seed as a human food.
Yep.
Which, you know, the first application for that went in 1998, so it only took 20 years. And, yeah, exactly. And we're hoping that, you know, the new way forward for some of these other products shouldn't take as long as that, of course. But so that was a major opportunity for the hemp growers, particularly in the grain belt in the Ashburton area, Canterbury, to scale up and grow a lot more for their grain production, leading to human foods. And that peaked us at 1,335 hectares were grown in that 2019-2020 season.
Yep.
So that was our high score with 260 licenses issued.
Yep.
Since then, it's unfortunately had a downward trend, and in 2023, we don't have the statistics yet. We've just requested the information from MOH, which we do every year for the 23-24 season, and we'll have that in a month or so.
Okay.
But in the 2022-23 season, the number of licenses, as I say, was 260. It's went down to 83, and the area under cultivation went down from 1,335 hectares down to 182 hectares.
Hmm.
Now, if you're a Ministry of Health official, you're thinking, well, at the time the thinking was, well, in a few years' time you won't have a hemp industry. And given the linear progression downwards, that's a, you know, you can see how they would say something like that. But it's probably time, and it may have started in the last season and definitely in the coming season, where these hemp seed suppliers have to regrow their stocks because the hemp seed market is growing for human foods. It's not growing as quickly as we would like, but that's the nature of introducing a new raw material into the food industry.
Hmm.
There's a bit of inertia around what they currently use and a bit of reluctance. And there's this massive stigma, of course, you know, industrial hemp, cannabis bad. So
yep.
It's really difficult to overcome that. So we need a lot of information to go out there. We need people that are using hemp seed foods to obviously continue using them because they're enjoying them and, you know, encouraging others to do so. So the market will grow.
Mm.
And as more of these incumbent, you know, big industries start looking at it and going, well, you know, we need to start incorporating industrial hemp in our products. And there's been some great products planted with their chicken, which was hemp-based, you know, that really made a big mark, you know, was heroed at the 2023 summit in the Industrial Hemp Summit that we had in Christchurch. And so, you know, there is some progress being made, but in the food side, it's quite slow. And again, going back to this problem with not having access to the secondary market, which is animal food, it's difficult for the economics to stack up. So that's why it's still quite expensive, which isn't helping the uptake of consumers to enjoy the benefits of eating hemp in their diet.
Mm.
But there's more products coming on. You know, hemp milk shouldn't be too far away, and there'll be other things that are happening whereby these ingredients are used. And, you know, that's exciting for the industry because, of course, you know, the more end products we can find, the more we can grow. And so the other reason for the decline in the licenses is also a general license to grow industrial hemp under our hemp regulations 2006 costs $511 including GST.
Mm.
And you can extend that twice. So you can actually get 3 years out of that one license. So
okay.
It's a barrier because it's a cost, but the real barrier is the fact that farmers have to fill out a form, they have to get police checked, there's all sorts of, then you've got to do an annual return. Again, many, many farmers are used to sort of compliance and dealing with traceability and things. So none of it's particularly arduous, but it's difficult to encourage a farmer to grow because of the how it would fit into their regulatory and compliance situation. So it's just a little bit confusing for people. And of course, you know, we don't want to encourage farmers to grow until there's a market for their products. So, you know, there's that classic chicken and egg, you know, do I grow and then try and make a product and sell it, or do I try and make the market and then who do I get to grow? So how do we scale the industry to match those supply demand? Because the worst thing to do would be to encourage a whole lot of farmers to grow, and if they can't sell their product, well then obviously they're going to be put off the idea of growing industrial hemp, and it'll be hard to turn them around in the future. But we, you know, we're making inroads into that, and the fact that farmers consider, you know, should be thinking about it as a alternate land use, and we need some foundation studies to really look into how it could help in that farming rotation. What I mean by that is, from a phytoremediation point of view, how can we, you know, we need some proof, we need some evidence that it helps pick up, say, heavy metals out of the soil, if that's what you wanted to do, or how much, you know, we're a gross nitrogen feeder, but how much nitrate could we stop being leached out into the waterways if we were using it as a riparian planting, you know, in the riparian planting sort of sense. So how does it fit into that rotation is a really big question the industry facing, and I think there's opportunities to work as a complement with many, many other primary industries. You know, we mentioned around, you know, you could possibly, obviously feeding it as a fodder to cattle would be quite difficult at the moment given the ACVM position, but how does it work in rotation with onions and potatoes and carrots? Does it help clean and condition the soil, or maybe remove some pesky nematodes from a potato, from the land where potatoes are grown? So is there a positive effect on the follow-on crop? So there's lots of work that we need to do. So we need to be working with these other associations to try and get that foundational knowledge and that research underway, so we can have the evidence for when it is appropriate that these markets can really, you know, pick it up and run with it. Because we only need the land over the summer. You know, we can give farmers a reasonable return for a 3 to 4 month growing period. So, you know, how does it fit into that rotation?
Yeah, right on. And you mentioned the iHemp summit down in Christchurch last year, which kind of led on to you being over at Oregon State University for the iHemp workshop at the Global Hemp Innovation Center over in Oregon State University. And so do you want to run us through how all this happened, Richard?
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, love to. The what happened, we have a regular two-yearly summit for industrial hemp. The last one in 2023 was in Christchurch. And we were lucky enough, a lady called Kanika De Silva from the New Zealand Product Accelerator had recently met some people from Oregon State University and had the opportunity to visit them. So Kanika asked me to prepare a 2 or 3 minute little introduction about the New Zealand hemp industry that she presented over Zoom to the Global Hemp Innovation Center, which is part of Oregon State University. And so from that introduction, we had the opportunity to invite Jeff Steiner, the director of the Global Hemp Innovation Center, to attend our summit. He came down as a keynote speaker he flew in from Oregon. And during the summit, he was just, you know, really impressed with the industry that we were working on in New Zealand, the developments we had made, the interesting things people were doing in the industry, but also very, very much the cultural aspect of being involved in a New Zealand conference, because of that cultural flavour and that and the Māori, you know, welcoming and things like that. And he was just pretty much blown away. So during the day, we had a meeting at lunch with some of the representatives from iwi and some of the crown some of the universities and the New Zealand Product Accelerator, and we formed a plan to sort of continue the work, to continue the conversation, which led to the organizing committee that was tasked with moving us forward came up with an idea about a hemp materials workshop that we wanted to host. And fortunately for us, Jeff and the team at the Global Hemp Innovation Center were able to put together an application to the United States Department of Agriculture, and one of their NIFA, the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, one of the branches there of NZDA, were able to, USDA rather, were able to provide some funding. And so the conference was booked in for August, and we used some of the funding to fly 20, well, we had 20 New Zealand attendees at the hui that was around the Hemp Materials Roadmap Workshop in August last month. So, yeah, so two attendees were already in the States, so they came down and across from where they were to attend in Oregon, and 18 of us flew over. So there was 11 industry people and 9 research-type people from the universities and Crown Research Institutes. And of those industry people, there was 4 from that had a, from an iwi background that were also involved in the hemp industry and other agricultural products. So the idea that Jeff wanted to really run with was to bring together these people at a workshop, but also have a cultural aspect. So we positioned it with the likes of NZTE and our trade consulates and things. We informed them that we were doing a trade and investment a workshop that would lead to trade and investment and closer collaborations in that sense between the Pacific Northwest and New Zealand, given that this is Oregon, North California and things, given that their agricultural backgrounds and, you know, are very similar. You know, we have fisheries, forestry, and a lot of agriculture in common. So, you know, there's that commonality there. So that was one part of the collaboration. The other cultural collaboration was between Native American peoples involved in industrial hemp and Māori. So that was great to see. You know, there was an Indigenous banquet. That's how we started the conversation. Having started the conversation over Kai, it was nice to have a start to the week of events in Oregon over a dinner with Indigenous peoples. And then the fourth sort of part of the collaboration is around that research. So having Oregon State University and their College of Forestry and other departments within there starting to collaborate in a useful way with organizations from New Zealand. So those were the collaborations that we wanted to happen. And then when we started the actual workshop, which was a facilitated workshop, so the idea being that we had professional people curating and sort of helping and guide us through this process, because what we wanted to do was ultimately end up with a roadmap for the hemp fiber industry. And we had started with the premise, the question was, how do we get the industry to use industrial hemp in their production cycles? And we had selected 4 large economic sectors, and those were the building materials, pulp and paper, biopolymers and composites, and carbon, mainly around the activated carbon biochar rather than carbon credits and things.
Interesting.
So that was the 4 big sectors. They had already done one on textile, so we weren't too worried about that. So we focused in on those 4 areas and looked at the value chain and the supply chain, you know, from how can we get hemp from the farm into those primary, secondary, tertiary processing steps to ultimately end up with some end products that the consumer is going to want to buy. And so we were looking at barriers and gaps, and so the barriers might be where we're lacking evidence. So there's your opportunity for the research and development people to come up with that collaboration around how to provide the evidence. And as I mentioned, specific evidence in the New Zealand, you know, foundational knowledge on what happens in New Zealand is going to be very important, because you know, you can do studies all over the world, but until you do it locally, you don't actually know what's going to go on until you've done it in your own backyard, as it were. So those are the research side, and then you to overcome these gaps, and then the barriers might be, or the barriers rather, and the gaps might be around, you know, well, do we have to retool? What are the continuity of supply issues? How are we going to actually use this hemp? What processing steps are required to get it into a fit for purpose raw material? So what is our specification, and how those industry specifications can be applied to, you know, the production of hemp for fibre? So it's that's where the industry and investment come in, and that sort of collaboration, because of course, you know, there's going to have to be some people that have realised that, hey, that's my role in all of this. I'm a farmer, so I could grow it, or my role might be I'm a end user or a materials manufacturer, so I want to use hemp as a raw material. And then you'll start seeing, well, then we need some people to invest in that primary and secondary processing so we can make the hemp into the to meet the specification of what these manufacturers and end users want. So it's a very interesting sort of dynamic. And what we're hoping for now that we've done the workshop, we to come up with a roadmap that identifies some of those things. And that will be useful for people to take to the, you know, the industries that are involved in the areas where they work. Like it might be a building materials manufacturer, you know, medium density fiber board or pulp and paper, and show these people, hey, look, this is not just a potential industry, this is a real industry. And we had, while the summit, while the material, the workshop was going on, we had a mini expo there as well. So there was American and some New Zealand products on display, and people were talking to their products. So, you know, you were picking up hemp wood and seeing, well, that's a medium density fiber board, so it's an actual thing now. You know, we're not talking about a potential industry. This people are making, you know, well, as I say, hemp wood's a great example because it's got a market straight away in flooring and all sorts of things. The person that actually made it all up was coming from a, you know, they'd done a similar thing with bamboo and other products. And, you know, the interesting thing about hemp wood is they use a soya binder. So incredibly, you know, low carbon, low, you know, and very sustainable. So
for sure,
yeah, and it's really exciting to see people using these other co-products from these other industries in that way. I mean, you know, there's just untapped potential, as I said, in the with the example of the leaf and the flowering tops. But even in the stems, there's lignins and pectins and all sorts of glues and things that are produced naturally that we're not using to the fullest extent. So that's really the exciting thing, I think, for the industry, is that, you know, New Zealanders could come up with engineering solutions to help process the fiber into these specified products and actually manufacture them. Mm. And all of that has export potential, all that tech, all that engineering. You know, the worldwide hemp industry is looking for these solutions. So for New Zealanders to start, embracing it and looking at those opportunities could really lead to some outstanding results. And of course, that's a lever that we want to play with the government as well. I mean, MPI wanting to double exports in 10 years, well, we can help them. You could be making horticultural products quickly because they don't have the same barriers to entry. Those health and wellness products don't require a $10 million decorticator to split the stems up. You can make them quite quickly, but that could fund the investment in this longer term plan, which is the hemp fiber, which can take some time. You know, you're not going to suddenly overnight start supplying a pulp and paper mill with 4,000 tons per day. You know, you've got to work up to that. And then the food as well. You know, there's potential there for export, you know, all sorts of things, given our Providence story and the value add that we can do and the reputation we have internationally. The markets are there for us. So it's a very exciting time in the hemp industry, and we're hoping to really bring that to people's attention this year.
I mean, so much uses and potential for it. It's and, you know, stuff actually happening, and everyone knows, you know, everyone's looking more and more towards, you know, sustainable building products, and Lord knows there's a shortage of houses around the country and that sort of thing. So, it's really exciting. And activated carbon, the biochar industry, that's another big one. And, you know, the benefits there would be to rural communities and the regions would be rather enormous too, I'd imagine, Richard.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the just going back to your comment, I mean, yes, it's a perfect storm. I mean, you've got the consumers wanting sustainability, transparency in their supply chains. They, you know, we need resilient supply chains for some of our staple products, and here's a plant that can feed, clothe, and house you. I mean, that's a pretty good start. from a regulatory point of view, you know, they want to increase export earnings. They want to reduce emissions. So having a sustainable and renewable resource for industry as a feedstock, big tick. And then you're looking at, you know, the benefits of actually using these products. I mean, you mentioned the housing issue. Well, yes. I mean, clearly, if you're living in a healthy house, you're not full of mold and damp and things like that. You're going to save money even visiting the doctors and things, let alone the fact that you're saving money on not having to, as I mentioned before, in a hempcrete house, your thermal ability to, you know, reduce your bills around heating in the winter and cooling in the summer. So, you know, there's economics metrics that match industrial hemp. There's the environmental needs of not only the planet but the people on the planet, and we can, you know, give big ticks to that. So, you know, there's some tremendous opportunities, and because it's a bulky raw material, especially if you're considering fiber, you can't transport this very far, and because as soon as you do, it's uneconomic. So you've got to add value locally, and that's where the bioregional developments sort of aspect of industrial hemp comes in, because you're looking at relocating some of that primary industry that primary processing right next to primary production. So these will be all sorts of jobs. I mean, there's obviously jobs in transport and factories and on the farm and close to the farm, but some of them will be, you know, quite highly paid jobs as well. So, you know, there's a massive range, and all those people coming back to our rural communities will help to, you know, maintain the standard and the quality of life in those rural communities, because a lot of, you know, if we all go into, you know, growing pine or you know, big corporate farms, those communities are going to really suffer. So something like industrial hemp, and bearing in mind as well, Craig, we want to work in with the other primary industries. You know, we see us being a complement to forestry. We want to work in with the wool industry. You know, as you can imagine, a wool-hemp blend for a pair of socks sounds like a wonderful idea.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? Yes.
Or an insulation material, or, you know, for your puppet jet, whatever, geotextiles. So there's massive opportunities there, again, back into that, you know, we're an alternate land use that could fit into a rotation. So how do we work with sheep and beef farmers to improve their returns on farm? And it may be that we start with just having a beneficial outcome from growing industrial hemp from a phytoremediation point of view, and increase the production of grass, and then their beasts grow quicker. So how does it all fit in? It's going to be very exciting to be part of that and to see it. And with that excitement comes more and more interesting and enthusiastic people that are doing wonderful things. And so it's if we can really create some momentum, I think it can really elevate our rural communities up, and therefore, you know, people are likely to go back to those communities, and that's a, you know, a positive feedback loop as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, I mean, it's so much, untapped potential, and yeah, it's very exciting, like you say. So that's great, Richard. I think we better leave it there for today, but I want to follow this, so I'll get you back on, you know, every sort of month or two, and we'll just follow this along and see how it goes, because it's incredibly exciting.
That would be great, and happy to do that. I'm sure your listeners would be interested to see some of the progress being made, and I'd urge them to, you know, get involved and write those letters to the MP and tell them that they want hemp industry locally. So, I'd love to keep in touch.
Yeah, okay. And at the start, you said you send out a newsletter every now and then, and that's nzhia.com or something, is it?
That's it, nzhia.com, and then there'll be a pop-up that comes onto the screen. If you hit that, that will put you on the public newsletter distribution. And then if you're really interested, and I'd encourage those people that want more information, we do have a members newsletter that has that information and a little bit more detail, and then there's members resources. So, you know, by joining, that would be great, because we're a voluntary organisation run on membership funds. So the more members we can have, the better we can do our job.
Fantastic. And good on you for what you're doing too, Richard. Yep, no, it's such a exciting, interesting industry. And, yeah, look forward to following how it goes. And thanks very much for coming on the show today, Richard. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Craig. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Yes.
Or hearing you next time.
Yes, indeed. All right. Thank you very much, Richard. Bye.
Cheers, then. Bye.
That was Richard Barge there from the New Zealand Hemp Industry Association.